Hey, Saucy But Sweet fam, we back and better than ever. Before we get started, I want to stress the importance of voting. I know, you've heard it all before. The election will be coming up soon and we all need to use our voice. I know we've been talking about the importance of voting over the last few months, but I really want to stress that if you do want to make a difference, go out, use your voice, and vote. Over the summer, I was proud to see so many young people out there protesting and exercising their right. But right now, our best form of protesting is the vote, and being on the right side of history. This week, we're going to talk about something we usually don't get into, politics. And of course, we're going to talk about my favorite topic ever, yes, sex, and dating and relationships. So stay put, you don't want to go anywhere. You are now listening to Saucy But Sweet with Allie McPherson, a podcast where nothing is off limits, where we talk about everything from romance, sex, pop culture, and everything in between. Sit back, relax, and enjoy an unfiltered time where we keep it sweet and always saucy. First, we are joined by the amazing Trone Dowd, who needs no introduction. Our Vice superstar is in the building. Well, virtual building.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Great to have you back. It's been a while since our cancel culture episode.
Word. Like at least more than a year at this point, right?
Well, no.
No, it's been
it was this year. It was before COVID. So it was like another life.
Oh, God. Yeah, honestly, I can't keep track of time anymore. It's been insane.
Yeah, it's a nightmare, I'll say. <It's a> nightmare. Yeah, so how have you been holding up with everything? Have you kind of gotten used to this year? Or are you still waking up as surprised as I am with all the headlines and everything going on?
Yeah, I mean, the headlines will never, cease to amaze me, it feels like. 2020 has been a roller coaster of just political developments in terms of like local and on the national level, obviously, we got this president in office who just can't help but make headlines every single day. But I mean, overall, I think I'm holding up okay. I think initially it took some getting used to, as it did with most of the country. But I want to say like maybe around July or so, things started to feel normal again. And that coincides with just the New York City sort of COVID hospitalization numbers, they sort of started to drop. Things felt a little bit safer. I'm not exactly saying I was jumping to the occasion to like, let's do a 100 person party, but I was starting to see friends again. It was cool to reconnect with folks after like that long period of nothing. Things started to feel normal then, and it's kind of been that way for the last few months.
Yeah, I do agree. There has been some form of normalcy. Like for me, been hanging out with my friends a little bit more in between the schoolwork and stuff, just because I need that break. I need to like be able to go out. I've been out to eat. I remember back when I was afraid to go out to eat, and then I was like, okay, let me just try it out, and it was fine. Now I'm not okay with like going inside to eat yet, which has not really been happening much anyway. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, mm-hmm. It's funny you say that. Yeah. Like I think last weekend was the first time that I sat inside of an establishment.
Wow, inside?
A long ass time. Yeah, it felt so weird of like, why the idea of sitting at a bar is something that feels so lost, because it's been months, it's October now. So yeah, it's been like a good 8 months,
Oh my God.
It's kind of insane.
Wait, where were you? What borough were you?
I'm in Brooklyn. Yeah, I live out in Flatbush and walked over to the spot that we stumbled on, and it was like, whoa. Okay, like, you're gonna seat us here? Like, inside? That's so strange. But to be fair, like, it was, like, me, my friend, and then one other person at the far end of the bar. So it was, like, it was pretty late at night, everything was pretty safe. But yeah, it felt strange.
Yeah, I don't know. I maybe in a month or so, maybe I'll be ready for that. I've been thinking about, like, graduation, which is gonna be virtual. And I was like, mm-hmm. I wanna fucking celebrate, but like I don't know if people are comfortable eating indoor, like us eating indoors. Not only that, but like how many people can I invite to eat indoors, it's just so much uncertainty, even though things are technically getting better. But you do have the idiots that are like, and the, you know, the NYU students who were like throwing a party, right, in Washington Square Park.
That's insane. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like that was, and then there was like this, what did I hear about? I don't want to get it wrong, but there was some party like in a bar where I think they got arrested, the people who, put it together, the organizers. But I think that happened like in Brooklyn, and it's just like, oh my God, guys, like, let's not get crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and I just feel like Americans, we're so entitled just culturally that we can't help but be like, but I want to do the thing. Why can't I do the thing? I'm going to do the thing. And it's to our detriment, honestly. It's a damn shame.
Really is. It really is. And that kind of segues into my next question, because, you know, the reason why this is all happening and why it's so much uncertainty and why people are just kind of a lot of people are not giving a fuck is because we have a president who doesn't give a fuck. Even with COVID himself in the hospital. And that kind of brings me to my next question. How have you been sorting through this, like, election cycle? Because I think if I see Trump's name in the headline one more time, I'm going to scream. Because everything annoys me. Everything.
Yeah. So as I've told a lot of folks who I've sort of, like, come in contact with the last few weeks, because they've been like, yo, you know, how are you holding up? I obviously work in politics in terms of, like, the media side, obviously. I can't escape it. And I think because of that, I've been sick of this dude shit for a long time.
Join the club.
Like, a real long time. Yeah. And it's just, it's to the point where it's like, I really wish I didn't have to wake up in the morning and I, like, just have to come face-to-face with what he's done today, and the next day, and the next day, and it's like, all right, he's up to something new, even though he just did something wild, like, less than 12 hours ago. It's been rough, man. I think, yeah, I'm with you there, just, like, I'm sick of this dude.
Yeah. I don't know. And then, I know me and you were DMing after the first debate with Biden and Trump, the first and last debate, apparently. And I think I had told you, and I told some other people, it reminded me of the debate with Mitt Romney and Obama in 2012, but 10 times worse.
Right.
So this was just children debating compared to that. But that one was really hard to watch also because I love Obama and many people loved Obama. Yeah.
For sure. Like, and I remember that debate. That one was hard to watch because, you know, obviously we're two people of color here. We're like, you know, pro Obama in 2012. Whereas, like, and also I feel like that was like two polished, you know, career politicians going at it in the traditional sense. And it got a little out of hand here and there, but, you know, it was still a debate at the end of the day, as opposed to the Biden-Trump situation, where it was just, like, from beginning to end, it was insane. Like, the moderator wasn't necessarily doing his job of trying to rein in Trump. Biden's trying to do his best of, like, I'm just gonna put up with dude's bullshit. and I don't know, I feel like, as we've sort of seen the last 4 years, like, sort of taking that high road with President Trump is not... It's not a great strategy. He will always win. It's kind of sad. I had this, what's the word I'm looking for? I had this, the sort of metaphor that I was speaking to Carolyn about. You know Carolyn.
Of course, that's my girl right there. Shout out to Carolyn, WNYC.
Yes.
Shout out.
absolutely. But I was talking to her and I was kind of like, you know, Trump in the traditional sense of, like, if you're playing a video game, like a fighting game, like, he's a person who button mashes and wins, you know, like, he doesn't have any strategy, really. He's not a person who's gonna, like, input combos and exact, like, you know, button combinations here and there. Like, he's just gonna scream and yell. And in a lot of cases, like, when you're louder, you win, especially in the United States. It's wild.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a terrible debate. I think people on both sides were saying how bad it was. You know, the moderator was so bad. And people were like, oh, he just did the best he could. Like, you know, I was like, no, that was bad. And the fact that they didn't, I know they turned, Lester Holt turned off Trump's mic the first time. Like, it was in 2016 when he was up against Hillary Clinton. Was also a dumpster fire.
That was a rough debate, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough.
I kind of think Hillary Clinton held her own a little bit better than Biden did.
Absolutely.
That just could be me being biased because I did like Clinton better. But anyway, but yeah, it just felt like the moderator wasn't doing his job. And the last debate I watched with Pence and Kamala, I was like, where's the moderator? Like, there were times where she did speak up. Like, I'm not going to lie. There were times where she was like, okay, no, Pence. Like, no. Like, you know, stop talking. But it was just very, like, it was, like, a little too gentle. And, you know, my favorite part of that debate was the fly. The fly won that debate.
Yeah, he definitely stole the show, or she.
Yeah, it was
it was, obviously it was a much better, more watchable debate. I worked it that night for my job. So I didn't get to pay as close attention as I'm used to paying to a lot of these debates. But yeah, I will say it was another case of a moderator who just wasn't necessarily, I think she did a better job of sort of like, hey, your time is up, you need to stop, you know, we're moving on. But she did a really bad job of keeping them on track.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, when it came to, like, she asks a question and then Pence just like, I'm going to answer a different question.
Right?
Or I'm just going to make a completely different point. And it's like, yo, you need to, like, tell him, like, you didn't answer the question and ask him again. And it was like, she just never did that. It was wild.
Yeah, and to be fair, I love Kamala to death, but... you know, there were times where Kamala also didn't answer the question that was asked for her, of her,
and it was like... I should be, you're absolutely right. It was both ways.
And I was like, guys, you know what I mean? And it's like, well, I expected it from Pence, because, like, fuck him. But, like, Harris, I'm like, she seems like a pretty stable, morally, you know... good politician in some way. Well, I know there's a lot of black people with problems with her, and you know, I'm not gonna really get into that because I'm not too educated on that subject. But you know, I thought that she would be the one to kind of go for it because she's very sharp. She's very sharp.
Yeah. And I think that came across in the debate, but I think those moments where she also was straying away from the questions, it's just, that's evidence of she's still a politician at the end of the day, and that's what they do best. And like, I'm not one of those folks who's like, oh, politicians are bad inherently. Like, I don't personally believe so, but there's a reason why you're a politician, and a good politician in a position where she is, where she's running for vice president. You have to be really good at spinning and, you know, making things work out for you, even if it means completely ignoring the question at hand.
Yeah, so, she's pretty good. She is pretty good at it. Like, my mom and I were actually laughing because there were times where she just had that, like, sass. And we were like, ooh, okay.
Oh,
okay, Kamala.
Like, I was getting flashbacks to, like, oh, wow, this is, like, this there's a lot of, like, mom, grandma vibes from Kamala. It was insane,
right.
But I loved it. There's charm to that, at least with black folk.
Oh yeah,
I think, at least speaking for myself, I don't know.
Yeah, as a black woman, I was looking at her and I said, "You go, girl. Don't let them walk all over you." And you know,
I'm talking. I was like, "What?"
Okay. What? And I wanted that from, you know, and Biden again. Biden, I believe, is a good person. I do not think that Biden is anywhere near his level. There have been some people who say, oh, I don't trust either of them. And it's like, well, no, I mean, I can see that, but like, I trust Biden a lot more. But I did wish I saw that more from Biden. I wish I saw that, like, bite a little bit. Just that little, because Trump is just so evil. He's so bad.
I think that just shows the sort of generational divide between Biden and Kamala. Because, like, I think Biden, he's so old school in terms of his politics, to the point of, like, you know, there's always a middle ground to be found. There's always sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? There's always sort of, like, some leeway with folks that you, like, disagree with, and it's all about coming together, and it's like, dude, we've had 4 years to realize that, like, your opponent does not give a shit about any of that. You gotta, on some level, you have to stoop to his level in some way. You don't have to go all the way down there, but, you know, like, you gotta get your hands dirty. Whereas I feel like Kamala is willing to throw some shade when she needs to, and it's amazing. It's modern. It feels a little bit more authentic. Again, she's still a politician, but just in terms of, like, millennials, at least, and, like, younger folks, it's like, yeah, that's how I would handle that. I'd make a ton of, like, really funny faces at this person who's clearly wrong.
Yeah. I'd pay money to see Kamala debate Trump, but he wouldn't be able to do it.
Yo, facts. Since when we had 24 Democrats running for the nominee, I was like, I wasn't going for Kamala, but I was like, yo, but if she ever went against Trump in a debate, she would demolish him. And I kind of want it. Yeah, I kind of want to see that. I won't lie.
Yeah, I think Bernie too. I was hearing Bernie talk about the debates, and I was like, oh man, I wish it was Bernie up there with him, because Bernie would have crushed him.
Yeah, I want to believe it, but I also think, like, man, Bernie has his points that he makes, and don't get me wrong, like, I personally agree with a lot of what he has to share and have since, like, 2015, 2016, but he's also just, like, he drives those same points home every single time, and that against Trump, like, I don't know. I genuinely can't even predict what that debate would look like, but I'd love to see it.
Me too. I'd love to see it, and it's sad that, well, I don't know if it's sad, because that the first debate, I think, made Trump look so bad. So the fact that he doesn't want to, like, redeem himself, or maybe he doesn't even think he needs to, but it's, like, the fact that he's just like, okay, we're going to leave it there. We're just going to, like, you know, vote for me. And it's like, really? Like, you don't look too good now, dude. You know?
I gotta credit the man that he is so good at putting up whatever facade it is that he puts up that I genuinely can't tell why he wouldn't participate in the next debate, whether it's, like, fear or if he genuinely thinks that, like, all the shit that he's saying on Twitter of, like, I beat him, I destroyed him, I did so well, it was incredible. Like, I can't tell if he genuinely believes that about himself, because he's just kind of built this character over the last 15 years. It's hard to tell the character from the real person, if that real person ever really existed.
Yeah, he's, I don't know. Somehow he has gotten people to follow him and follow behind him for all this time. And even though some people have, you know, said, oh, you know, based on his response to the COVID thing, I don't want to vote for him. And there have been people who say that. But there's still, you know, the Proud Boys and all these other people that, like, look up to him. Yeah. And he's been able to have that following in that core.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty scary, but, you know, at this point, it's been 4 years. It's sort of like this reality that we all just have been forced to face. But I'd be lying if, like, I said I don't have those moments where, like, I'm writing his name still or typing it out of, like, President Trump. And I'm like, damn, that's really just been the case for the last 4 years. We've really had him as president. It's wild. And the shape of the country right now kind of reflects his tenure. It's, you know, we have protests going off every single night still all over the country. We have, you know, environmental issues from fires to, like, you know, him just not believing in climate change. Like, we're going to see the ramifications of that in the years to come. Just every single aspect of, like, American politics has completely been thrown away. And it's scary. It's scary.
It's so scary. And something that really annoyed, well, everything annoys me about this dude, but, like, something that really bothered me was when he pretty much was saying that if he was to lose, he wouldn't really make the transition of power happen smoothly. Like, he basically was kind of like, I felt like that was kind of like a threat. If that does happen, the stuff that you saw in 2016 is nothing compared to what we're about to see in 2020. And there will be riots, there'll be protests. I know there are people going off up in arms about the police brutality protests, and my god, well, we're gonna see if Trump decides, you know what, I'm gonna stay here, it was rigged, you know, all this bullshit he's been saying, I'm gonna be out in the protest. How about are you? I'm just curious, are you gonna be out here to put signs?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know, at least it's as far as, like, my career goes or whatever, I know, like, the traditional sense is, like, reporters don't get involved, but, like, I've always been, I just kind of think that's bullshit. I think it's very important to sort of, how should I say this? I think it's, we need to sort of change the culture of media. And, like, I know your show is not about, like, journalism per se, but I think in the traditional sense, it was, like, as a reporter, you have to, like, separate from sort of being partisan or whatever. But I think that that's not true. I think every human has an inherent bias. You know, like, we have opinions, and it's okay to express those opinions. It's okay to be politically active, or to, you know, partake in a protest or whatever. Like, I was out there during the summer after, you know, the unfortunate events in Minneapolis. It's kind of like, how could you not? I'm a black man. Yeah, I write about politics. Yeah, I write about police. But, you know, I'm also a black man that exists, you know, and there's certain frustrations that come with that of just existing in America as a black man or as a brown man or woman. You know what I mean? It's you can't help it. For sure.
I mean, these protests, I was so proud to see so many people out, man. And I did an episode, Stay Woke and Well. And I've done some other episodes during the pandemic about all that's going on. And right, the fact that black people, we were dying at a faster rate of COVID, right? And we had a higher chances of getting it, yet we were still out in these streets with our signs and protesting, obviously, hopefully with masks to be safe. And I was like, wow, that's my people. And my dad, I remember I told my dad and I were talking about it, and he was like, man, I am proud of my race. And I said, me too. Beautiful. And just seeing everybody go out. And it's funny because I had, I don't know if you listened to that episode, Stay Woke and Well, that I did over the summer. But one thing that I did talk to, like, Raquel, her name's Raquel Samuels, and she was saying the thing that was irritating was that people were kind of now, out of nowhere, and not black people, but, like, non-black people, were now starting to realize that this is a problem. And she said, although she's happy to see people posting on social media, she was just like, yeah, but, like, what now? Like, it took you this long to get here, and that's kind of... She's like, we have to do more than just social media posting. So I feel like people, there was both of those sides where we're proud of each other and we're happy, but then it's kind of like, well, why did it take this long?
Right, right. And I think that's sort of been the big question for a number of months now is, you know, now that there was this movement and we seem to get very incremental changes, like, I'd be lying if I said I was completely happy with, like, what came afterward. You know, there was a lot of, like, big companies being like, we stand in solidarity, but still, like, doing fuck shit on the side to, you know, creators of color and whatever it might be. So, like, it's a damn shame. But, you know, we were obviously heard on some level. And it's just a matter of, all right, like, what's next? We've voiced our opinions better than we ever have. And this has happened so many times. It's not like we haven't had it happen. You know what I mean? Like, we had Michael Brown. We had Trayvon. We had so many cases like this. But, you know, like, this was the biggest of its kind. It was all over the world. And, yeah, it's just a matter of, all right, we got to stay tuned and see what's next. Like, what's the movement going to do in the months to come?
For sure, for sure. And something I did notice, too, is I feel like I was never, like, a political person. Like, politics was never something that I was interested in. And I feel like if it wasn't for the president we had and, you know, the debacle with, you know, Hillary and Trump... If that hadn't have happened, I don't think I would have been as informed as I am now.
Right.
But then again,
right.
I didn't always know I wanted to be a journalist either. So do you feel like that, were you always into politics, or do you feel like the fear and anger that you had during Trump kind of pushed you more into it than you were before?
Right. No, I would say, so I always wanted to be a journalist, but it was in college that I sort of fell into, you know, paying attention to politics. When I became editor-in-chief of my college paper, I had transitioned from being an arts and culture writer to, like, now I'm reading news articles, now I'm writing stuff to sort of fill in gaps throughout the paper here and there, because we were, like, old school, you know, like, oh, we need to fill so-and-so inches on this page. So I was sort of forced into, like, you know, paying attention to the political scene in Queens. And after a while, it just kind of became fascinating to me, and it sort of led to my first job. So I always paid attention to it, but I was definitely more on the local level. And for me, kind of very similar to you, it was 2016, and sort of like following that election, it just kind of fascinated me. And it was ever since then that I sort of was like, oh, I like this, and I actually wouldn't mind covering this. And I remember, like, I was working at a local paper at the time, the Queens Tribune. Shout out to that dead paper, unfortunately. but yeah, when I was working there, like, I would use any excuse I could to write about Hillary and Trump and that race, because I just thought it was so cool. So yeah, I've kind of been into it for a few years now. I will say, like, in the last year or so, I'm kind of sick of it. But, you know, I still try to pay attention to, like, the bigger headlines here and there. And I try to do my due diligence with work, obviously. So,
yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it's important to stay informed, because we can't fight this. We can't fight against it if we're not informed and we don't know what the hell's going on. So, you know, it's important. Now, before we go, since this episode is sex and politics, but obviously we talk more about politics because that's just what's, you know, what's going on right now. As you know,
for sure,
Pandemic Bay is a thing. And I personally didn't know that it'd be so easy for a lot of people to, like, find love during this time. Because I feel like the pandemic has heightened things. Like, if you're in a long-term relationship, now it feels like you guys have been, like, kind of, it's kind of like being a long time relationship on acid. Like, you're just so,
yeah,
you know,
it accelerated quite a few relationships that I know
exactly.
of.
Exactly. And then when you're single, it's like, damn, like, I'm really single. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And obviously it's,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. And obviously it's cute and all, for some people, but I do feel a little weird about it because I was never an online dating person. And I know for a lot of people who kind of found love interest during the pandemic was through online dating. And so it kind of changed the way we connect with people. And what are your thoughts on this kind of new normal for dating? Like, cause now for me, I'm a little nervous with like going on a date and, you know, I have a mask, he has a mask. Have you been tested? Like all these questions that like now you kind of have when you're on a date. Like what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's the beauty of the internet. You know, like the idea that during a pandemic you still could sort of get your shit off in terms of like your love life is pretty great. You know, like it's really cool that like let's say if you were on like what are the kids doing these days, Tinder or whatever it might be, like you can you can like, you know, you can find someone, start a dialogue, and in this, you know, time in history, it's like, hey, before we meet up, like you can do the COVID test and show me your results and I can do the COVID test, so that way we can like go out on a date and kind of do this safely. Like I've had friends who did that, and yeah, it's kind of like, that's dope. Like, if we were in this situation with coronavirus and all this crap, let's say in 1996, like, that wasn't a possibility. You just weren't going to be dating unless you were willing to take that risk. So I think it's actually really cool that, you know, we were able to take advantage of technology during such a weird time in history. I've done it before. It depends on the app. Personally, like I've never been a big fan of like the very much like on its face, like here are a collection of photos, swipe through them. It just feels a little dehumanizing. And that, I know that's exclusive to me. I don't necessarily put that on other people. Like I think that like if you're able to sort of get over that psychological hump, by all means, take advantage. But I think like the apps that are a little bit more in depth and try to like match you based on your interests or like try to spark a conversation based on like something you have in common, I think that's like more so like the lane that I belong in the few times I've actually tried online dating. But yeah, I guess just like in recent years I've kind of fallen off of online dating. It's just, I don't know, man, I can't keep up with all the apps and stuff, and work has gotten the best of me. But yeah, I've heard nothing but success stories the last few months, so more power to people.
But yeah, this was a great chat.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Of course. So it was fun.
Yes. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll catch you on Instagram.
Bye.
All right, take care.
Next, we are joined by the fabulous Noelle DeLilly. You may remember her from our first episode, Love is a Gamble. She's been working her butt off all year. Right now, she is a CNN fellow and a multimedia intern with News 12 while also interning with NBC. And, not to mention, also working toward her master's in journalism. I know, I have no idea how she does it either.
Yeah, so getting started, thank you for coming on to Saucy But Sweet with Allie McPherson for the second time.
Yes, thank you for having me back. It was so fun the first time. I'm excited.
Yes, I have my peoples.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so first off, I want to ask, how have you been holding up? Like, how are you doing during this ridiculous year? And now it's an election cycle. Like, how have you been balancing everything as a journalist and as a person?
Oh my gosh, 2020, I don't even know. It just feels like every month it's been something different, you know? Like, everything from, like, Kobe's death, Chadwick Boseman's death, John Lewis's death, all the craziness with the election, you know, all of the people who have died and, you know, contracted COVID, everything with the hurricanes in Louisiana and the fires in California. Like, it really has just been one thing after another this year. But I'm just taking it day by day. That's what I tell everyone. Like, that's all I really can do, you know, is just take it one day at a time and try to focus on what's right in front of me and not stress so much about what the future is gonna look like, because who knows, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And Chadwick Boseman, I mean, that hit all of us so hard, you know. Yeah.
I was sobbing. I was like coming from a friend's house, walking down the street, just crying. I ended up like buying like my sad girl meal, which is usually Taco Bell, and like crying into my chalupa. It was like so, I think it was the fact that it was a surprise, you know? Like, no one knew that he was sick. We had just seen him in movies. And, like, he's literally Black Panther. Like, of all, like, obviously, any death of a Black person is gonna be heartbreaking, especially someone who's a role model for others. But, like, Black Panther, the Black superhero, like, really? That's insane.
And so, what are your, are you as shocked and appalled as I am with, you know, everything going on with Trump and the whole COVID debacle and the debates? And how have you been taking that in?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that like so much craziness has happened this year and it's the same year when we're having a presidential election is like laughable. Like, how, like, what are the odds of that? But I think, I don't know. I mean, not much that President Trump does surprises me anymore. Like, it's, you know, there's not a ton that surprises me necessarily. I mean, with COVID, it's just really heartbreaking how many people, you know, how many Americans have died and, you know, how many people have lost their jobs and just the wave of just suffering and struggling that people are going through is really heartbreaking. And, you know, especially when you think about a lot of the facts and a lot of the things that we've learned, it doesn't have to be this way. You know, it doesn't have to be this bad. Like, we see other countries that are handling this a lot differently than we are. And so it's just really unfortunate that, you know, people who live here are having to suffer in the way that they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And earlier in the show, when I spoke to Trone, we were actually, when we watched the debate, the first debate, we were tweeting, we were DMing each other. And we were saying that the first debate reminded us of the debate with like Mitt Romney and Obama. Yeah. And how it was really hard to watch because we loved Obama and we saw him kind of get crushed in the first one. And then he kind of got back to where he was supposed to be afterwards. But, with like Biden and everything like that, I really want to see him crush Trump. But Biden's just not that person who's going to come with the insults and who's going to come to Trump as he comes to him.
And I mean, now with everything, like, if we're even, I don't even think we're going to have another debate, you know, like the second debate, they did the town hall thing instead, which was also kind of strange to me. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I don't feel like that seems to be Joe Biden's like temperament. That doesn't seem to be his strategy. Like in the debate, you know, there were moments where he and Trump went back and forth, but he also had a lot of moments where he looked straight into the camera, like speaking to Americans at home, you know? And so I think that's a lot more of his strategy. And if you watched him in the town hall, that you could see that coming through there. You know, he's not, I don't think, a very combative presence. I think where he and his campaign are really leaning into is connecting with people and connecting with Americans and trying to make those through lines as opposed to, you know, attacking the opponent.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, and there are some people who think, and at first I thought it was crazy, but now I'm like, they might be right that that Trump never really had COVID. Like, there is that.
Yeah, I've seen people say that. I don't know. I'm not sure. I feel like I don't quite see what he would gain from lying about it. I mean, what I saw people saying was that maybe for sympathy, but I don't feel like that has really been the general, like, sentiment. Like, I don't feel like people saw and were like, you know, felt so sad or felt bad for him. I felt like people saw it. It was kind of like, wow, like if the president of the United States can get it, really anyone can get it. Like it's really serious. And, you know, I think a lot of people saw it as a referendum on his behavior, you know, like the discouraging of people from wearing masks, not wearing masks himself, kind of downplaying the seriousness of the virus. And then you end up getting it is kind of ironic. So I don't know. I have seen people say that maybe they thought that he didn't really have it. I'm not totally convinced, but who knows?
God, oh, he makes me so mad. I was telling Trone this too. Like, y'all thought the protests in 2016 were bad. Watch if he wins this time around, what it's going to look like.
Yeah, it'll be crazy for sure. I'm really like anxious to see one way or another, like whomever wins, I'm very anxious to see how the country will react. And, you know, for a while, like, you know, President Trump wasn't saying that he would like peacefully concede, like he wouldn't agree to that. I think he did in the town hall. But like prior to that, like he wasn't saying if he lost, he would be like, he would peacefully transfer power the way past presidents have, which is very frightening. Like, what does that mean? What would that look like if, you know, if you have someone in office who refuses to leave office, and what does that look like? How do their supporters respond? So I don't know. We'll see. It's gonna be interesting for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he wants to be a dictator. Like, he really just wants full power on everyone, and he's just so crazy. And you know, I don't know if you did. You join the protests when he was elected president?
I did not. No.
Yeah, I did. That was my first protesting experience, and it was amazing. It was just, it was a really sad day. I remember it was raining, and actually, I had just gotten with my boyfriend at the time, and like our first or maybe second date was protesting together.
Every like day, wow. When I wake up and check my phone, I'm like, oh God, what happened while I was sleeping? What happened while I was sleeping? Like, it's always, I wake up to some headline of something crazy, and oh man, I'm ready for this year to be over, honestly. It's like, I know that it's not like everything is magically going to like be better or reset itself in 2021, but just something about getting out of this like wretched year is gonna feel really good. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, although the election is on everybody's mind, I never was a politics person. So, this is the first time and last time I'm gonna be talking about this. But I don't know. But another thing is dating, which is something, you know, the pandemic bay, now online dating, which has already been growing over the past few years, it is now kind of at its peak, because it's like, well, I don't feel like going out there, going on dates, meeting guys without a mask, you know, all that stuff. So it's like, are you someone who enjoys online dating? Is this something that was kind of easy for you to adjust to, or hard?
It wasn't too hard. I've been using dating apps since I was like, oh my gosh, since I was like 19, you know, since I was in college, okay. Like in undergrad, like
yeah.
Tinder, Bumble were like the big ones at my college campus in undergrad. So that part wasn't so different about just being like, oh yeah, like let's, you know, I'm just gonna get on an app, see who's on the app, I guess. I mean, what was an adjustment was I think just not like having to be more creative about dates, you know, because like at least at the beginning of the pandemic, at the beginning of the quarantine and everything, nothing was open. You know, bars weren't open, restaurants weren't open, museums weren't open. So the stuff you might normally do on a date, like you can't really do because nothing is open. So that was like the weird part in the beginning. Not necessarily like meeting people on apps, because I've done that before. More like, okay, you met someone, now what? You know, like there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. Lots of FaceTime dates and stuff.
Yeah, and what came to mind now is, I don't know if you saw a video on Vice where a guy asked a girl out with his, basically through his drone. So he had like the drone go over to her building. Yeah, and then they literally had a date kind of through that, I believe. I remember. Yeah, no, it was a bubble. Something like that.
And like in a little, I saw that, I think.
Yes, and I was like, wow. Like that was a cute story. And it was cute because it's in New York. And for me, I've lived in New York my whole life. To me, Sex in the City has lied. It is not the it is the place to find sex, sure. But when it comes to love, I'm like, ooh, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I feel like it's because there's so many people in New York City that there's like almost too many options, you know? Like people don't really commit to someone because they have so many options, and it's like oversaturated with people. So it's like, you know, maybe you like this person, maybe you're getting along, but you're not gonna really be committed, you're not really gonna be focused on them because there's so many other distractions, you
yeah
know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the last person I, you know, was like dating or whatever, not even dating but just seeing, was in March in the beginning of the pandemic, which is the time I probably shouldn't have been. But I don't know, do you feel like it's, You seem to be a fan of online dating, but do you kind of think that this new way of dating kind of takes away from that in-person connection feeling, like that energy that you get in person?
Right. I think it definitely can because, you know, you might get along really well with someone over the phone. They might be a great texter. But when you meet up in person, that physical chemistry might not be there. You know, the connection doesn't always translate from like the virtual cyber world into real life. So I definitely think that that is a risk for sure and possibly a downside. I will say, like, for me personally, I have a boyfriend now and we met during we didn't meet during the pandemic. We met like in 2019 through a dating app, actually, as well. Yes, through Tinder. And we only went out like twice. And then I was kind of like, not really feeling it. But we reconnected during the pandemic back in April. And so I think it was beneficial in a way because of the fact that we weren't able to see each other all the time. Because I feel like there were less distractions, and so it really forced us to really get to know each other and really, like, open up. And because all we could do was FaceTime. All we were doing was FaceTiming and talking on the phone, especially because at this point I had gone back to California to, like, be with family and everything like that during the quarantine when, you know, school was online. And so that really forced us to, like, really talk and, like, get to know each other, whereas, like, in-person dating, like, we could go on 5-6 dates and I might not really learn anything about you. Like, I really might not know more about you because we're at a bar and there's music, or we're at a museum and or we're watching a movie. Like, there's a lot of other distractions. Whereas, like, dating during the quarantine, dating, you know, through this new kind of landscape, really forces you, I think, to be, like, a lot more, like, intimate and open, maybe faster than you would normally. And honestly, more creative, too. Like, we were doing lots of, like, Netflix parties. We would, like, have food delivered to each other. Like, I sent him postcards. Like, we were, like, being a lot more, like, creative. Whereas, like, if I was dating a guy, like, in a regular world, regular situation, that probably wouldn't be happening.
So would you say this dating experience is, like, better than some of your experiences you've had physical then? Like, before the pandemic?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I guess in a way, I think that it just forced me to, like, slow down a bit, you know? Because, like, I'm the type of person that, like, when I'm single, like, I'm going on dates, like, every weekend. I'm talking to multiple guys. Like, I'm all over the place when I'm, like, dating. You know what I mean? So I feel like because I couldn't do that, it forced me to just slow down a bit. And then I also think too, like, it really forced me to think, like, who am I actually serious about? Because it's one thing to, like, oh, like, I'll go out to dinner with a guy, maybe I'm not super into him, you know, but it's like, oh, well, it's a free meal, like, whatever, like, it's free drinks, you know, like, free movie, like, I'll just go just because it's fun, it's just a social thing to do. Whereas, like, if I'm gonna FaceTime you for 3 hours, it's because I like you, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna waste my time, because they're like, before the pandemic, I was talking to a lot of different guys, then once it started and, you know, I wasn't seeing anyone in person, slowly it kind of dwindled off from those other guys, because I was like, what's the point? Like, I don't, it made me realize, like, I don't really like you this much. I'm not really as interested. Maybe you don't like me as much. Maybe we're not as compatible, because if all we can do is talk on the phone and, you know, text each other, then I'm not gonna be likely to do that with someone unless I'm really, like, invested or really have feelings, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like New York City is a good place to, like, date by date. I mean, just kind of like if you're interested in just talking to different people, and there are people like that who just don't want to be in a committed relationship. But it's like, for someone like me who's like a relationship, I don't like the whole, oh, what are we, oh, let's not put a label on it. I'm so sick of hearing that. Like, I'm just like, no, New York, like, no.
It's a generational thing too. I feel like it's definitely like generationally, like, younger generations, we're less likely to commit. Like, we're more likely to be in these situationships, which I also hate. So I feel you. I mean, I'm a relationship person too. Like, I don't mind being single, and, like, I can have fun being single, but I prefer to, like, have, like, a meaningful connection with someone. Like, I like that better. So yeah, I definitely agree that I think being in New York and dating as a young person in general is challenging because, you know, so few of us are really, like, looking for that, you know?
Yeah, and that makes me sad. And now with the pandemic, it's even more so. You should get on Tinder. You should get on Bumble. You know, how is dating in LA? I'm just curious.
You know, it's okay. Yeah, I think dating in LA, I mean, in California, maybe not California, everywhere, just really like LA, it's a lot more, I think, superficial a little bit, like in a sense that, you know, a lot of people in LA, everybody like wants to be like an influencer. Everybody wants to be like a model. There's lots of like wannabe Kardashians running around. So I think that like, there's a little bit more shallowness, perhaps, is like the biggest thing that I've kind of noticed. But I mean, from where, like, I'm not from like the city of Los Angeles, but like I have family there. I have a lot of friends out there. So like, I think other parts of the state are different, but definitely LA, like you get kind of that Hollywood crowd for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to LA. I told you, I think I went for like 5 days. So I really, obviously, I was not seeing anyone. I was not doing that kind of thing. I was just looking around, and I was being the tourist and having a great time. But yeah, from what I noticed from guys, that they did seem a bit like, oh, look at me. Like, I did kind of get that vibe. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, and I was talking about this to my friend, I feel like it's easier finding someone in New York for some reason when you're not from New York and when that person's not from New York. I don't know what it is. I found that. Like, my ex was from Ukraine. But then when I talk to guys here, I'm just like, ooh, no.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I think that makes sense in a way, because I mean, there's also so many transplants in New York. Like, there's a lot of people that live here but aren't from here. My boyfriend and I, we met in New York, and he's from Florida and I'm from California.
And is he a relationship person, or has he been someone that wanted just kind of like quick things in the past? Like, or is he like you?
So I'm like his first like serious girlfriend.
Okay.
So like, he's dated in the past, like he's had like, you know, relationships that like lasted maybe a couple of months, you know.
Oh,
but like, okay. His first like, okay, this is like serious, like, you know, I'm an adult now, like, let me like get it together. So I don't know, I think that maybe like if I'd met him a few years ago, he probably wouldn't have been as like eager to commit as he was. Okay. But I think that he's older than me. And one thing we've talked about is that, like, you know, a lot of his friends are like getting engaged and getting married. And like, you know, I think when you look around and you start to see like people in your circle moving forward in that way, like it encourages you or pressures you, you know, to kind of like, oh, wait, all right, let me not get left behind, you know? You definitely like don't want to just like rush into things or jump into things just because you don't want to be alone, you know? Like, that's like the biggest mistake, I think, like on the flip side of like, you know, being single and everything, is like if you start to feel the pressure because of relationships around you or because of your age or because of your family or whatever reason, like you may rush into something that isn't really right for you, you know, just because you don't want to be alone. And that's never good.
Yeah, but like, Instagram is something, man. Woo, especially on Valentine's Day. What? You've been single on Valentine's Day before?
Bro, oh my god, I've been single on like most Valentine's Days. Sadly, I've been single on many, many, many Valentine's Days. This year, I was single on Valentine's Day. In fact, too, oh my god, I was so mad. I was talking to this guy around the beginning of this year, not my current boyfriend, a different guy, and he literally ended things with me the week of Valentine's Day. Allie, when I tell you, I was so pissed. It was literally like a couple of days before Valentine's Day. I was so mad. The only thing that like helped me not like cry my eyes out that whole weekend was that I was going out of town. So like, I had a distraction. I had a little bit of a getaway. Otherwise, I would have just been in my bed like crying, like watching like movies, like eating ice cream by the pint, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm curious, is this your first serious relationship in a while? Like, is this kind of...
Yeah, in a while. I've had serious relationships before, but this is my first, like, boyfriend, girlfriend label in a while. Like, that's serious, you know? Because, like, I mean, like so many people our age, I've had a lot of situationships. I've had a lot of, like, oh, we're talking, whatever that means. I hate that phrase. I've had a lot of that, like, that have lasted a while and that have, you know, meant something to me and were meaningful. And when I think about those situationships, like, I refer to them as exes, but, like, we never put a title on it, you know? Which I think, again, is something a lot of people probably can relate to. But yeah, this is my first in a while, like, serious boyfriend-girlfriend relationship.
Yeah. And another thing, like, how are people kind of... I'm curious of how people are going through, like, their hookup phase and their, like, I don't want to say... their whole phases during the pandemic.
I hope they're not going through hookup phases, because it's not like it. I mean, yeah, I hope people are not, like, going through, I hope they paused their whole phase, because now is not the time. If anyone is listening to this and you're going through a whole phase, I think you should probably pause it for the time being, because I mean, really, just like, It's risky enough to, like, be going out with people you don't know. You know what I mean? So if you're dating, right, like, and you're, you know, you can be FaceTiming and texting for as long as you want, but eventually you're going to want to meet up, you know, eventually you're going to, after you talk for a bit, you're going to want to go out, you know, you're going
to
want
to. It's hard not to do nothing with somebody that you with. Like,
if you're seeing one person, then I think that that's fine. I'm saying because of COVID. Like, if you're seeing one person and you've decided, like, this is the person that I'm going to be intimate with and spending time with and going out with, I think that's fine. I think the whole phase thing implies that there's multiple people that you're doing that with. And not even that there's anything wrong with doing that, like, for sex. Like, sex positive over here. Do what makes you happy.
Do you.
Right, do you. It's COVID that I'm talking about, you know? It's like, you shouldn't really be interacting with that many people that you don't know, you know what I mean? That you're not...
For sure.
If it's one person that, like, this is someone you're, like, okay, serious about, or you're dating or something, then I think that's okay, because, like, that's just one person that you're going to be spending time with, going out with, spending the night, going to their house, whatever. But, like, if you're dating multiple people, talking to multiple people, it probably isn't really safe to be doing that with so many different people, and you don't know who they're all dating and spending time with, and if they're back to work in person, like, you know. So, I mean, just from a COVID standpoint, it probably would be good to pause the hookups for now.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, the last time I hooked up was March. It was a good experience, I'll say that. But at the same time, I wasn't something that wasn't, it was good, like, the sex was good. But the whole situationship, that's what it's called, that's what we're going to call it, it just wasn't benefiting me. And so as I kind of had to kind of isolate myself, because, you know, with COVID happening, I also was like, you know what, I think I'm going to stop the whole situationship thing, and I'm also going to stop having sex with people that aren't my boyfriend. And I made that decision, and so I'm not going to name the person. I'm really not going to name him. I want to. But that person over the pandemic was like, I had to get some, you know, something from him. I'm not going to say what it is, but he was like, hey, you know, there's something between us. Like, I feel like there's something there. Like, you seeing someone? And I'm usually I would lie and say, yeah, but I was like, no, you know, I'm not. And he was like, you know, maybe we can do friends with benefits. And I didn't say yes to it. I didn't. I think he really wanted me to be desperate and to kind of beg. Because when I then said something to him, I said, oh, you know, maybe we can. He was like, oh, never mind. Like, and I was like, okay, so your butt hurt that I didn't jump at your feet. This is why I'm saying I'm done having sex with people that are not committed to me. Like, and it feels so good to say that.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. It's like, sometimes, you know, you get to a point where it's like, I'm sharing a part of myself with people who don't deserve it, you know? Like, I think there's a difference between people who are, you know, having sex or being intimate, and it's just like for fun, and they don't really care. They don't expect anything from the other people. But I think there's a difference between that and, like, sometimes, like, yeah, you're sharing this part of yourself with people who don't deserve it, who, like you said, aren't serving you, aren't benefiting your life in any way. So, like, other than the sex, like, what are you getting out of it, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, there's, and I've done it where you dated guys or you're talking to guys that you just have nothing in common with. Like, the only thing that you guys enjoy is sex. Nothing else. What I'm doing with my day, what you're doing with your day, we don't connect. And it's like, I I know what it's like to have everything and to have everything in one person, and I don't want anything that's less than that.
Yes, that is a word, girl. No, I felt that. Wow. No, that's totally true, because I feel the same way. Like, I'm a Sag, and you know, they say we're commitment phobes, and I'm not afraid of commitment, but I think for me, it's like exactly what you said. I know how it feels when you find a person that is meeting your needs and is fulfilling you and is checking all your boxes, and you're so happy. And if I don't feel that, I'm not going to commit to someone. Yeah. Like, that's what it is, you know, like I'm searching for that feeling, and if I don't have it, then I'm not gonna move forward with somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. And because of the pandemic, you know, you do feel that loneliness and that, but it's like you have to understand, I'm doing what's right for me. And during the pandemic, I'm not alone. I have family. I have friends.
Especially in the beginning, I was feeling it when I kept seeing everyone quarantining with their like booze, like baking cookies and making bread and they're buying plants. And like people were like really like, you know, like, oh, I'm doing all this stuff with this person because we're not trying to see other people. Like we're all in the quarantine at home together. Like I was like, wow. Because I was
like all alone.
Yeah, I was single at that point. So I was like, oh, I'm lonely and bored and like quarantining alone in my cold apartment, and you guys are like over here baking bread and watching Harry Potter, like whatever.
I'm not gonna lie, this sex though, I do, although I said that I'm not gonna do it with anyone that's not my boyfriend anymore, that is something to miss, especially during the pandemic. I'm sure everyone is who has a partner is, or a lot of people are getting it on, and I'm low-key like, all right guys, okay,
there's gonna be a lot of babies like 9 months from now, like lots of babies named Corona or something like that.
This was a great conversation.
This is so fun. I'm gonna like what you said. You phrased it so well that like you know what it's like to have everything, so you're not gonna settle. I'm gonna hashtag that. That's a good phrase.
Yeah, I know. My friends were like applauding me for that. I was like, it's just it's because I. You know, and it's good to, the thing is, after my ex and I broke up, you know, I was single for a while, and then I was like, you know what, let me kind of be out here, let me see what it's like, and it's important to experience that, so now I know what it's like, and I know, ooh, I don't really want this anymore, I ain't feeling this at 24, I want to be able to bring home a dude to my mom, not sneak them over and all of that, come on, nobody got time for that.
Felt you, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but come on, anytime. We always have great conversations.
This is so fun.
Of course. Yeah, so that marks the end of the episode. Woo!
And that's all for this week. Thank you for listening to Saucy But Sweet with Allie McPherson.